number one, February 20th, 1969, 1:30 p.m. room 401, State Capitol Building.
Oh, this isn't a man room, is it?
Assault and related offenses. Preliminary draft number one.
Too bad, though, that they did.
To zip through assault and related offenses, right?
Okay. Yeah. Now, this draft has 3 degrees of criminal assault.
All right.
And also some other related crimes, such as menacing and recklessly endangering another.
Well,
the
fine.
Assault,
you put
basic
me down
assault
there for
provisions.
Thank you. Bye.
Really, apart from existing law to this extent, that it's when you read it the first time, it sounds more like battery than, I mean, as we think of battery than assault. At least if you think of an assault in terms of an incomplete battery. But as you get on here, there's a fairly recent Oregon case cited, which points out the Oregon court really looks upon assault as a separate offense, and so. It really isn't as radical a departure as it might appear at first glance, but this draft follows what has been our pattern in our other substantive crimes, and that is to provide for various degrees of the crime. This hopefully will, when it comes time to add the penalty provisions to all these crimes, this will help to distinguish among the different classifications of crimes and provide for a consistent penalty structure. So. What we do, we start off with the lowest form of the crime. In some cases, in some of the other drafts, we've only had 2 degrees of a crime. And in this particular one, we have 3, obviously. But the assault in the third degree would consist of either intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly causing physical injury to another. Now, these definitions, or the definitions of the terms that appear in this, I think need a little bit of discussion at this stage. Now, we have a draft article on the culpability requirements. And these terms, intentionally, knowingly, and recklessly, are all defined in the article on culpability. That is going through its second draft now. Professor Arthur Willamette's work on that. But all of these terms are defined for general application throughout the criminal code, as well as the term negligently. Now, other terms that appear in here, deadly or dangerous weapon, and the definition of physical injury and serious physical injury have been defined in the article on general definitions, and we brought a copy of this. This article was, or this section rather, of the preliminary articles was considered by subcommittee number one at a meeting about a week ago. And except for a couple of minor amendments, was approved by the subcommittee. Now, those definitions are terms we're going to want to keep in mind as we examine this assault draft, because it's these definitions not only will apply to assault, of course, but they'll apply to some of the other crimes. Dangerous and deadly weapon comes up in armed robbery, for example. But the idea is to follow the format of the Model Penal Code and the recent codes of other states in putting our general definitions early in our schematic arrangement of the code and apply them throughout, rather than having to redefine each of them with each succeeding section. So. Okay, so we'd have third degree if he causes physical injury to another, or if the mens rea element is just negligent conduct, if it's negligent conduct caused by a deadly or dangerous weapon. Then assault in the second degree would be intentionally or knowingly causes serious, and we've got an error in this draft. That in section 2, 1A, that should read physical injury rather than bodily. That's clerical error there, because we do use the term physical injury rather than bodily injury throughout the, not only this draft, but our definition is the definition of physical injury rather than bodily injury. Or if he intentionally or knowingly causes physical injury as distinguished from serious physical injury, if it's mere physical injury but by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon. Or if it's just reckless conduct, as that term is defined, by means of a weapon again. Now, an assault in the first degree, which is
here just a second ago.
Here we have, as far as the culpability elements, it'd be intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. And the type of injury, again, would be serious physical injury. And plus the added element of under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of life. Now, the as you can see, as pointed out in the commentary, the aggravating factors of culpability or motivation that the defendant had for the assault, and the seriousness of the injury that's actually inflicted, or these are conjunctive or disjunctive elements, or the dangerousness of the means of, that the actor uses, such as a deadly or dangerous weapon. I think, well, on page 2 we can skip through some of the culpability language here. I don't think it, I think it's helpful in examining this draft, but at this stage of the discussion I don't think it would add too much to what I've already said. Then if you'll look over on page 3, we have a chart set out here which contains additional comments with respect to the various sections of the draft, showing the degree of assault, the mens rea required, the type of injury required for the, well, in this case, assault in the third degree. And page 4, just continuation of further explanation of the various sections, the mens rea required, the type of injury, and the type of weapon, if the weapon is involved. Now, over on page 6, I think there's some important discussion here, and I'd kind of like to read that to you. It's a quote from the New York draft, their revised penal law. The proposed assault formulation requiring actual physical injury places the crime of assault in the main category of offenses, robbery, along with robbery, larceny, perjury, etc., which are committed only when the offender succeeds in his criminal objectives. As with other offenses of this nature, an unsuccessful endeavor constitutes an attempt. Attempted assault, then, will be governed by the same rules which applies to attempt to commit other crimes. It's necessary to discuss attempted assault in terms of the law of attempts, in particular in regard to the elements of proximity and possibility. Then, elsewhere in the New York Code, they define an attempt in this language. A person is guilty of an attempt to commit a crime when, with intent to commit a crime, he engages in conduct which tends to affect the commission of such crime. In deciding what tends to affect the commission of the crime, the New York courts have adopted the dangerous proximity test. Acts in furtherance of a criminal objective do not reach the stage of an attempt unless they carry the project forward within dangerous proximity of the criminal end to be obtained. Now, this is a pretty ethereal language in some respects, I think. But all of the states, as they've approached this question of attempt, what they've tried to do, they've tried to move attempt farther back into the actor's conduct. In other words, to pick up activity which we would not think of as having reached the dignity of becoming an attempt. They're moving it backwards.
Into a conspiracy.
Yes, and getting farther back so that what will happen is that you're going to have an attempt occurring earlier in the stage of a crime, and also you're going to have less need for crimes such as what we consider assault now, in which you don't really need to complete the battery upon the individual. So we would then, if if we adopt this approach to assault, what we would think of really now as assault would become an attempted assault under this formulation that Model Penal Code in New York has taken. And I might add, although it's not said out here, California is going in the same direction on their approach to assault. But now, the Model Penal Code, I think I should point this out, kicked this around a long time. And the Model Penal Code first decided that they would go in the direction that the New York draft finally took. Then, on their final draft in 1962, they changed their minds and put back in the traditional concept of assault, so that they have an attempt or the commission. If you'll look over on page 11 on your blue sheets, the text of the Model Penal Code, you can see simple assault consists of an attempt to cause or actually causing. So they've got a two-pronged thing here. And their commentary to their final draft indicates this was just a decision to not throw over the traditional concept. Now, this is, I think, probably the basic policy question with respect to this article that the commission is going to have. Whether or not you feel that it is a sensible approach to go the way that New York is going and call it assault only when it's actually there's actually some injury inflicted on the victim, and the incomplete crime would then be covered as an attempt, or whether you want to adopt the approach that the Model Penal Code finally did, although there was quite a difference of opinion among the ALI reporters about this, and the original approach was to go the way that our draft finally looks in the form that you have in front of you now. But the article on inchoate crimes is being drafted now by Professor Platt. It hasn't been typed. It's substantially ready, but unfortunately, all these drafts just don't dovetail at the time we'd like to have. But I know that, although I haven't seen George's draft on this, I know that his approach is going to follow generally the type of approach, as far as attempts are concerned, that the new codes have been taking. There may be some minor differences in language, but now think over. Well, in our commentary, we always try to not only summarize what this proposal does, but to show you where it comes from, and also how it affects our existing law. Now, on page 8 of the draft, you can see that assault in the third degree is adapted from section 211.1, the Model Penal Code. Also, assault in second degree comes from the Model Penal Code and the New York Revised Penal Law, and assault in the first degree from the Model Penal Code. But there is that basic, and I think a very important difference from the Model Penal Code, in that we do not include the attempt as an assault.
On page 7 here, down to this paragraph here.
Yeah.
It says the last sentence, assault with intent to rob, rape, or kill will be dealt with as robbery. Do you mean attempted robbery?
No.
You don't?
No.
Then I lost it, and I got lost.
Because our definition of robbery defines robbery as in the course of the commission of theft, he uses force. So it really goes back a stage. So robbery, under our draft, it would be a rare case where you'd have an attempted robbery, because an attempted theft, even if there's no property taken, if force is employed, it's going to amount to robbery. And those drafts, the robbery draft has been tentatively approved by, in fact, I think I sent a copy of that out not too long ago. Now, I did. Then, of course, over on page 9, we we set out the existing statutes, and most of you are already familiar with those, the draft also would do away with the separate statutory crime of mayhem. It would be covered as a degree of assault, depending on the nature of the injury and whether a weapon was used. Now, State versus Wilson is the case I was referring to, which the Oregon court, on page 10, that's where that's set out. It says, we are of the opinion that criminal assault, even as defined by this court, should be regarded as a distinct crime rather than an uncompleted battery. The mere fact that assault is viewed as preceding a battery should not preclude us from drawing a line on one side of which we require the present ability to inflict corporal injury, denominating this as an assault, and on the other side, conduct which falls short of a present ability, yet so advanced toward the assault that is more than mere preparation in which we denominate an attempt.
Where would placing the hand on the sword and saying, if we're not at size, I'm enslaved in the
book? Well, that would be what we'd call menacing under the draft.
Okay, well.
And that's over here.
Could you couldn't bring that under attempted assault?
Well, you probably could if it would fit in with our definition of an attempt, as that's going to finally be formulated. And but if you look over on page 14, you'll see section 4, menacing. A person commits a crime of menacing if by word or conduct he intentionally attempts to place another person in fear of imminent serious physical injury. And then section 5, page 17, is recklessly endangering. A person commits a crime of recklessly endangering another person if he's recklessly engaged in conduct which creates a substantial risk of serious bodily injury. Here, the mens rea would be just reckless conduct. And I think probably, just to help the understanding of the terms that we've got here, if you'll look at this article on separate draft here is before you on definitions. You can see how we've defined these terms. Physical injury means impairment of physical condition or substantial pain. Serious physical injury means physical injury which creates a substantial risk of death or which causes serious and protracted disfigurement, protracted impairment of health, or protracted loss or impairment of the function of any bodily organ. Deadly weapon is defined as any instrument, article, or substance specifically designed for and presently capable of causing serious physical injury. Now, that's intended to cover guns, switchblades, and brass knuckles. So
this is
something that just has no really other purpose but to be a weapon. Whereas the dangerous weapon would pick up the other types of things that our courts apply to the beer bottle and all these things that have been defined throughout the years as dangerous weapons. Here it would depend on how the articles used or attempted to be used. Now, probably no other article in the proposed code will these definitions be more important than in the assault draft. Now, these definitions have not yet been approved by the full commission. As I indicated, they were tentatively approved by the by John Burns' subcommittee. Now, I think that gives a pretty sketchy overview, but one other I should mention over on page 22, we have the crime of coercion. Which generally follows a similar type of crime coercive conduct that's set out in our theft draft. But the difference is that under theft you have the added element of obtaining property as a result of this. Coercion, I think, is explained terms of the theft draft on later pages of the commentary. But these related sections, although I think they help fill out the code and help fill out the draft. don't contain the real basic policy questions that, that our main three sections do. That gives you a pretty sketchy overview, and normally what we've done in subcommittees is take a general look at the whole draft and then go back through and start, and I'll try to answer any questions and you have on the draft, or discuss any of the elements that we've set out.
Okay, let's go back to the salt. I might have one here. Do we generally, through the new code, then adopt the, I guess you'd call it standard in criminal law, but totally opposed to medicine, it's contradictory to medicine. Assault in the third is the least harmful, and assault in the second is the next least harmful, and assault in the first is the most serious. Burns, for instance. And
correct, yes.
The other way around. I just wonder, I have a hard enough time keeping things straight.
Used to think murder go the other way around.
Yeah. This is more like the murder here. The first degree murder is.
Yeah. Our approach in our drafting has been to start and use an ascending approach and have our basic statement of the crime as third degree or the lowest degree of the crime, and then aggravate that by adding certain factors to it. We felt that made more sense than to start with the highest and work down to the lowest. It's somewhat an arbitrary. Decision, but it seemed to me that if we can simplify our code by saying if you do such and such, you commit robbery, but in the third degree, and if you commit robbery but you do it with a gun, then it's second degree or first degree, and work your way up the scale.
Does this presume that two categories would not have logically handled? I noticed in the other penal code in New York, they talk a simple and an aggravate. The only thing I'm worried about is you almost need a program now to assault the third, assault the second, and assault the first. I think it's good. It's perhaps a lot better than what we have, but I just wonder if it's necessary to break them into three elements.
Well, I think that's a good question, and our approach has been to limit the number of degrees wherever possible. In many cases where we followed the New York draft, for example, where they'll have three or maybe four degrees of a crime, we've gone with just two because we felt that it was unnecessary to get into that much refinement between the various sections. But the approach here was formulated on 3 degrees, although I think without doing too much violence to it, you could probably combine it into 2 degrees, although I'm not sure that it would really make it any easier to work with in the final analysis, but because
Don, you didn't bring with you a committee book that has the completed drafts or approved drafts of subcommittee number one, did you?
Not all the subcommittee number one, no.
Okay. Well, speaking to your question, Wally, if I could.
Please, sir.
It's beginning to fall into line. Bob knows because he sat on the commission from the beginning. But the way we're setting it up in degrees, and we're using the same preface, like for burglary, a person commits, you look here at section one of assault in the third degree, and it's set up just exactly like it is in robbery, burglary, arson. Person commits the crime of arson in the third degree and then it breaks down. And it's all related to the definitions, and you might not believe it, but you look at the first page of general definition, preliminary draft number one, and Bruce Spalding, Bob Chandler, myself, and Doug Graham spent 5 hours going over those seven definitions a week ago Tuesday. And so we had a problem, I don't know whether it was in burglary or robbery, where we tried. Well, in larceny we did cut it down to two, but in burglary or robbery we tried to cut it down to two, and we couldn't do it, as I recall.
Yeah, when we went into the commission that came out of subcommittee, we were into 2 degrees, Then we got into the question of the fake gun and the note to the bank teller type situation, and the commission felt that they wanted to make this a more serious degree of the crime of robbery, make it a step above unarmed robbery. So in order to do that, we had to go to 3 degrees. And your final draft, the Tendi draft that you recently received, robbery, does have a 3-degree formulation for that reason.
Right. The other point, if I could, Mr. Chairman, to which I want to speak, is the fact that like you take assault in the second degree, and we're drawing the distinction between causing physical injury by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon and causing physical injury by means of it, recklessly in the one instance and intentionally in the other. This is the same formulation that we used for the same degree of robbery and burglary, and it's the trend in the states in the revision projects to adopt this uniformity. Ask a technical question here. In section 2, that should be physical injury, in 1A, Don.
Yeah, so right. I mentioned that to them before you came in, John.
Okay.
It's a typographical error.
Any other questions on assault, Bob?
Yes, I was going to raise a point in section 3, the last line, manifesting extreme indifference. I realize that's model penal code language, but I'm wondering if we need the word extreme in there. This introduces another troublesome fact question into the proof for the prosecutor, and I sort of like the problem is plaguing us on gross negligence in the negligent homicide statute, and I would wonder what the subcommittee would think of deleting the word extreme.
Where does the commentary pick that up? What page?
Well, it's commentary.
Yeah, in the graphic on page 5.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a reference to it.
I don't think there's any separate discussion. It's set out as in the chart. There isn't any separate discussion about the use of that particular language.
Do you feel that that is necessary?
I have a comment about it, but I wanted to look at the model penal code. What is that? 211?
211, yes.
211.1?
Yes.
It isn't in the model penal code. What's the derivation of that, Don?
Just a minute.
Isn't it? I thought it was.
I think it comes from New York, probably, is where it's from.
It appeared to be.
I thought it was
they
in the
say depraved.
Yeah, they have depraved
human
indifference to human life.
Grave risk.
Well,
this is reporter language.
Yes, in page 11 on the blue sheet in your big book is the text, the model penal code, and it shows 211.1 subsection 2, extreme indifference to the value of human life.
Yeah, under aggravated assault.
Did you pick up any annotations in the New York on cases reported on this, Don?
No, there aren't any, John. at least none that we could locate.
And how about Michigan?
Well,
did they adopt it?
Well, Michigan follows the New York draft. on this, we didn't set out Michigan in here because it's Michigan right straight down the line, and most of their crimes is almost identical to New York language.
Well, let me, Wally, Mr. Chairman, if I may, we have a basic policy decision to make in the first instance, which is we're going to separate assault and battery. Is this not correct?
Yes.
And we're going to create, and if we decide to go the route and adopt the preliminary draft here, we're going to also, in effect, create a new class of crimes called attempt. Is this not right?
That's right.
Following New York. Well, I don't know whether you approached that question before I came in, but it seems to me that somewhere along the process that we have to thoroughly discuss the real basic departure we're making from existing Oregon law and come to a policy decision there. Speaking to the question that you raised, Bob, time and time and time again, we come up against the insertion of new language here, which to some extent or other complicates the code and seems to me to leave the way open for a judicial interpretation. And our job, of course, is to try to simplify and render the present code more cogent. So, as Don knows, I haven't never been particularly enamored by the insertion of a lot of these new terms. Now, if we have some precedent in some other case, some other state, which we can incorporate into legislative history to give the court some sort of a guideline with respect to this, and also the prosecutors and the defense attorneys, then maybe it's okay. But are we opening ourselves up to another definition here?
So let me see.
Extreme indifference to human, the value of human life.
Okay, this is a let me see if I can.
So Don, what
pardon?
She's gone. For the day, I let her go for today.
No, I'm sorry, she's gone.
I haven't read the Model Penal Code. Do they have commentary in which they say why they use the word extreme here?
Well, they have commentary, but I don't think that there's any discussion of that particular language in their commentary.
You can see the very point that John's getting at. You've got a judge instructing a jury using this the first time. He says, indifference is extreme. If what? And how does he explain? For mere indifference.
Well, I think we have concurrence here, unless somebody would disagree. I think we would strike the word extreme, then it seems to be.
Do we not render first degree assault a little bit? Should I say that we don't make it stringent enough to make it first degree assault if we just have a manifesting indifference to the value of human life?
You go back to what he has here on page 5. See, he says down here, this section is intended to cover the most serious forms of life endangering conduct. It includes the following. You get down and get through non-fatal serious physical injury. You might be also guilty of attempted murder. It rises to that. Mayhem. We're not going to have the crime of mayhem anymore. It's going to be covered under this. And then we get to reckless conduct evincing extreme depravity, in which he uses the language really there of the New York Code then. For example, shooting into a crowd without any specific homicidal intent. Now, but the problem is, a judge shouldn't instruct by the use of examples. Then the jury gets in their head that it must fit that example.
Can't do that.
But it certainly is intended to get to a something beyond just indifferent, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's because indifference, you could be indifferent and just be merely reckless about what you're doing.
Well, yeah, but what's the difference between, in other words, are you suggesting that we then have extreme recklessness? But
oh, no. No, this wasn't... That language... you see, we've got the culpability language in the section, intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. But then it has to be something more than that. And this language is intended to really furnish some guide without further definition, but to furnish some guide, as pointed out in the chart, of the really flagrant situation.
Well, John, Mr. Chairman?
John.
I wonder if it might not aid the subcommittee in approaching the very legitimate question the Attorney General raised if we didn't start with Section 1 first. I think we'll find when we start going over Sections 1 and 2 that we're going to have some questions concerning them, and when we thoroughly digested the problems inherent in those sections, I think we're going to be in a better position to approach first-degree assault and be able to express what we mean with regard to it. I make that as a suggestion.
The only question I have, Don has raised it, and you in turn, John, have raised it, that is the policy decision of dividing assault from the assault and battery going to assault, including what we see here. Do we want to make that decision now, or should we go ahead and discuss these elements and conclude with that? That's the major policy decision. And, any suggestions on the appropriate?
Well, yeah, I think that's a, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a good comment, because if this subcommittee rejects this concept of assault, then we're going to have to do a major restructuring of this thing, because the injury to the victim is an integral part of this definition of assault.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I for one am in favor of this approach, because lawyers are and judges are the only people that think of an assault and a battery as distinguished from each other. The man on the street thinks an assault means that you belt somebody. And it's the common parlance that he was assaulted by the mob. They didn't just wave their fists at him. I'm in favor of this approach myself.
Bob?
I'm in favor.
So am I, John.
Yeah, it's the direction in which we're going, or everybody seems to be going, and also hand in hand with it, the creation of the new crime of attempt. And I think it simplifies things for juries and for the courts and lawyers.
Kind of short law school by day, though. You don't have to explain the difference between criminal and civil assault. Excuse me, John, go ahead.
No, I favor it, Wally, but I thought that we should all be well aware of what we were doing, because it will doubtlessly raise its head at the full commission meeting when we consider assault.
I might add this, Mr. Chairman, if I could, that as we've gone along here through the drafting process, that we've tried not to leave any holes. In other words, even though we change the name, we still intend to cover certain kinds of conduct, but our feeling was, well, it doesn't matter too much whether you call it an attempted assault or something else, as long as you've got a prescription to cover this undesirable conduct.
Okay, well, let's take John's suggestion, but
I just have a mechanical question now at this point, because I assume that, maybe I'm wrong, that this is something which is going to be integrated into ORS eventually. For that reason, I wonder why, where we have a section in each of these cases, in the first two cases here, we then have a subsection 1 but no subsection 2. I mean, it just seems to me there's no need for those parens there around the 1 with the parens around it. Could be stricken.
It's true.
And I don't know. In other words, are we going to try to go with what our present style and form manual for legislation is in this, or are you just ignoring this at this point, Don?
Well, we're ignoring it at this point, but your point's a good one. Whether we're going by the format or not, that ORS, that it is unnecessary, and it's even under our drafting approach.
And we have, from time to time, restructured drafts or made technical corrections by official subcommittee action.
Yeah.
And I think it might be appropriate to do that here.
Yeah. Most of our other drafts, like memory serves me right, we would just begin with the preamble here without any number, and then A would become 1, B would be 2.
Yeah. Well, let's look at section 1 then. Are there any concerns about assault in the third degree?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. As I understand it, Don, intentionally, knowingly, recklessly are going to be defined in the general articles, is this right?
They're defined in the article on culpability.
All right. So they're defined. Now, somewhere along the line, so I have no objection concerning 1A. But repeatedly, we keep running up against the question of the negligence factor as far as criminal liability is concerned. And I guess we've kept it in all along. Is this not right? Or did we kick it out of robbery? No, it wouldn't be in robbery.
No, it's not in robbery.
Not in robbery.
No.
But what about negligently causing physical injury to another by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon? What kind of, give me a wherefore. It's going to,
well,
guys out target practice.
Yeah, we've got a statute now, negligently wounding another is a crime in Oregon right now. That's negligent conduct through the use of a dangerous weapon.
The unloaded gun assault, unloaded in quotes.
Yeah, right.
Well, that wouldn't cover that.
In quotes, really wasn't.
What he means is thought it wasn't loaded.
But I've got a worry that goes beyond that. It seems to me that this language is certainly broad enough that I'm operating my automobile and failure to maintain a proper lookout, hit somebody in a crosswalk. That seems to me I'm guilty of assault in the third degree under this language, because although my automobile isn't a deadly weapon, the way it's in which it's used, it's a dangerous one.
That's right.
And I'm guilty of simple negligence and failing to keep a proper lookout, and I'm guilty of a crime as well as liable, of course, in a tort action. But are we going
in other words,
too
you
far?
Think you'd better exclude the operation of motor vehicle from this?
No, I'm just raising the point at this point. I don't know whether I want to go so far as to say that, in effect, what looks like to me, that negligence combined with the use of any instrument, article, or substance which, under the circumstances in which it is used, attempted to be used, or threatened to be used, is readily capable of causing death or serious physical injury. Certainly an automobile fits that. And I don't know whether we are intending to go to the point of making, in effect, a simple negligence in the use of an automobile which causes injury to someone a crime. I don't know that I'm willing to do that.
Of course, wouldn't this be true of almost any tangible article, a paperweight, negligently could become a dangerous weapon? So I drop a paperweight negligently, bounces off your foot, and I just not committed an assault in the first third degree.
Well, we can't exclude automobiles because I raised the same fear that Bud did as connection with something else, and I don't know what other draft it was, but automobiles certainly shouldn't be embraced within the scope of Section 1, but they certainly should insofar as Section 2 is concerned.
Be intentional.
Yeah, because there are occasional cases, I can think of about two or three recently, where people have been prosecuted for AWDW for running people down with cars. And it's a legitimate objection, and Don, how do you get around it?
I'm serious. Does that help any?
When you get to reckless, see, in assault in the second degree, down in subsection, what is subsection C now, or three if you're going to renumber it, There you get into recklessly causes, and I assume that we're getting to the kind of conduct in connection with use of an automobile that we now use under the guest passenger law or
negligent homicide, for example. Is, you know, you kill somebody now with your car.
Yeah.
You're driving under the influence or something. But if you're driving the influence now, you run over somebody, you don't kill them, there isn't any crime.
Reckless driving.
Reckless driving. But I mean, as far as it relates to the victim, there isn't any crime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
no
what we're
driving up
we
road
felt
road
it was somewhat of an anomaly to say that if you kill somebody with your car, you can be charged with negligent homicide, but if you just run over them, you don't kill them, then you're not committing any crime with respect to the victim.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, there's a way out, and it's probably the way out that we find altogether too often. But Model Penal Code speaks to this by striking dangerous. It says by means of a deadly weapon. The car wouldn't come within the definition of deadly weapon. Because a deadly weapon is an article or substance specifically defined for, designed for, and presently capable of causing serious physical injury.
Ralph Nader might argue with you.
Yeah. What about Willie Mae Rogers?
But under the definition of dangerous weapon, now New York specifically includes an automobile. I mean, they say including a vehicle, as that term is defined elsewhere, and Michigan does the same thing. Now, in our definition of dangerous weapon, we did not specifically include a vehicle in it, but nor were we intending to leave it out, though.
Well, we discussed it, Don.
Yeah, but we didn't, I think under our definition of dangerous weapon, a vehicle under certain circumstances could be fit within the definition. Yeah.
Well, absolutely, and I think it's really important that we not try to put too darn many things in the statute and leave these up for the determination of the court, because you remember the famous beer bottle case where the Supreme Court said that a beer bottle is a dangerous weapon, and there may be, if we restrict it to specifically define things in the statute, we may be overlooking something, so I wouldn't mention it.
Seems to me we got a choice of either going to criminal negligence, as they did in the New York revised penal law, or dropping dangerous weapon, as they did in the model code.
Well, of course, our definition of negligence is the definition of criminal negligence. In other words, we're not talking about...
Where is the definition?
Well,
that's maybe
yeah,
that solves some of my problems.
Now, our definition of... we're faced with the problem that these culpability definitions have been through the subcommittee once, but they're in the redrafting stages now. But generally speaking, our definition is going to be pretty close to the New York definition of criminal negligence, which is this: a person acts with criminal negligence with respect to a result or to a circumstance described by a statute defining an offense when he fails to perceive a substantial and unjustifiable risk that such result will occur or that such circumstance exists. The risk must be of such nature and degree that the failure to perceive it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would observe in the situation.
How does this operate? When you're reading it in the criminal code, then you have to almost add gross to it, then, don't you?
Well, it has to be a gross deviation from a reasonable prudent man, yeah.
I had mentioned earlier, Houston has called one of his infrequent. We never know what days he's going to have them, not have them.
That's state and federal.
State and federal.
Oh, dear.
2:30, and he told me that I told him about this meeting that already been scheduled on the theory that we weren't going to have a meeting, and he said, well, I won't keep you more than a half hour, but I've got to go.
You better go, because I understand that you're the swing vote in there.
Yeah.
I'm sure he wouldn't want to stay up here.
If I'm not there, it'll be 4-0. When I'm there, it's 4-1.
I wonder, did we call Haas?
Pardon? Yeah, he had to go to Portland.
Oh.
Is he a member of this committee?
Yeah. But he's also a member of the task force. When we drew straws, and I was chairman of this, so I came to this, and he went to Portland on higher ed. We're supposed to be in Portland tomorrow.
But in any event, I was going to mention this, too, that these culpability definitions distinguish between negligence and recklessness, in that negligence is a failure to perceive, and recklessness, you've got an actor who's aware not a failure to be aware. He's aware, but then he disregards what he's aware of. He has an awareness of this risk, and he disregards it, whereas otherwise it's just neglect on his part in failing to perceive the risk.
Do you see any problem with the one we've had in Salem with what I'd call overzealous enforcement of every accident has to have a citation? And boy, does that really comes on strong when you have a fender bender and you've got a criminal charge of reckless driving or failure to yield or following too close. It seemed to me that almost every automobile then would be, you could sandbag by charging them with assault in the third degree, and perhaps that's right, but I wonder if it's every fender bender that causes physical injury. I realize it's physical injury, but that's a bump is a physical injury.
Well, now wait a minute, Wally. Physical injury, well, that's right. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's right, if the guy got hurt in the accident.
Yeah, that's right.
And there was an impairment of his physical condition. And
of course, you wouldn't be suing, you know, as just a fender, but you'd be suing because you have been strained and torn.
Well, I think the criticism of this is well taken. I do feel that there are circumstances where I think negligent conduct should be covered. It seemed to me that the better approach would be to eliminate the dangerous weapon from this and not eliminate negligent conduct, because it seems to me that negligently wounding another person with a gun should be included in here.
I would think that would probably be the instance in which it would be most used, wouldn't you think? Negligent wounding. Give us another wherefore.
This, if you went that route, you could settle just with the one subsection there, and just if you leave out deadly or dangerous weapon under the third degree.
No, we'd leave deadly in.
Well, you just want to leave out dangerous.
So you pick up the quote unloaded unquote gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In other words, we weren't going to equate the culpability elements and say that you're going to be just as guilty if you're negligent as you are if you're reckless or intentional in your conduct, but that if you are negligent, you have to have this other element of a weapon involved.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling would be, we don't have a quorum to make the motion, but at the appropriate time when Berkeley comes back, to move to strike the words "or dangerous," and with that amendment, I would think that section one would be acceptable.
Bob,
I think that's all right. What are you going to do now when we get to the next section?
Okay, let's go to the next section. John, yeah.
Well, person commits a crime self-sacrificially if he intentionally or knowingly causes serious physical injury to another. Intentionally or knowingly causes. Now it doesn't have to be serious, but it just has to be physical injury to another with the additional element of using a deadly or dangerous weapon. Now, it's appropriate in my judgment to leave dangerous in there because of the
intentional
running somebody down. This is the assault with a dangerous weapon. Or recklessly causes serious physical injury to another by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon. Now, I think that's appropriate, but I get into the constitutional hang-up between sub B and section 3 insofar as assault with intent to kill is concerned. I can't see the sufficient standard prevalent in the statute to distinguish between the two.
Between B and C?
No, between B and Section 3.
Oh, in Section 3, oh.
I mean, if I hold up your grocery store and or get in an argument with you and shoot you and don't kill you, I'm intentionally or knowingly causing you physical injury by means of a dangerous weapon, but I'm also intentionally and knowingly causing serious physical injury to you under circumstances which manifest an extreme indifference to your life. So how's the judge rule on the demur there, Don?
The question's on serious, isn't it? Is that sufficient limb to hang on?
Well, we certainly have a different definition of serious physical injury as opposed to physical injury. I think, although in your hypothetical, it would almost go without argument that it would fall under a first degree because assuming that you had an injury of any kind, if it was a serious physical injury.
I guess maybe the serious.
But I would think that I assume you're talking about a Perkey problem possibly here.
Possibly.
We don't furnish sufficient guidelines in this.
Got it.
Okay. Cut that last general meeting, the Perky problem.
Okay. What do you think, Bob? Do you think that's a hang-up, or do you think that the serious adds an additional element that takes the cord off the limb? I think maybe it does.
I think it's all right.
Well, it seems to me, it furnishes a guide for a grand jury, or for a district attorney, or for a judge. He has to determine not only the element of the nature of the injury, plus whether or not this is under circumstances that would manifest extreme indifference to human life.
Would you hypothecate subsection B as a pistol whipping, maybe?
Well, yeah, I think it could be a pistol whipping.
But pistol whipping could also be section 3, first degree, couldn't it?
Sure.
Depending on how badly
hurt the victim is, yeah.
Because I think to me a pistol whipping would certainly manifest an extreme indifference to the value of human life, and if the injury were serious enough, it certainly qualifies a first degree.
Or an aggravated, what we would think of now as an aggravated unarmed assault, kicking with the feet,
yeah.
That sort of thing. You might kick somebody in their ribs and not cause serious physical injury as we've defined that.
Right.
Term.
I think that the definitions that we have here between physical injury and serious physical injury sufficiently define it. That I'm ashamed to say that I find nothing wrong with sub 2.
Well, I think the record should show that John, although you mentioned it, did point out the typographical problem of physical.
Oh,
so
I wanted to beat him too.
So he's not letting it go
I
by.
I knew he'd catch it.
Well, Bob, do you have any comment on 2, or should we go on to 3?
Well, I'm thinking about the serious in there. I suppose it's essential to have that word serious. I have. In other instances, discourage the use of these qualifying adjectives, just as I did in Section 3 here, because of it. But I think you have to have it in sub C there to distinguish C from B. Otherwise, you don't have any basis for distinction. So I will vote I there.
All right. Let's go on to 3. Intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly causes serious physical injury to another, then, which is the same as assault in second degree plus the serious injury and the additional element or standard of under circumstances manifesting either extreme or just indifference to the value of human life.
Okay.
A little hesitant. Bud indicated, Berkeley indicated that he was concerned about extreme, but was not prepared to remove it. I'm inclined to agree with Bob that, that these adjectives, you're either indifferent or you're not, really. It's a little, it's a degree of being pregnant, perhaps. She's very pregnant. I suppose one could be very pregnant, but it goes beyond the fact that if you're pregnant, you're pregnant.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're talking about the highest degree of assault.
True.
It becomes a matter of interpretation unless it's qualified, and there's a wide range as far as indifference is concerned. I'm concerned about leaving extreme in there because I'm not sure that I'm prepared to delete it. I just don't know. Don, I would like to hear what your research is indicated with regard to this and how you think you can justify either leaving it in or taking it out, or both. Also, I also would like to know how you can justify having recklessly causing serious physical injury. Assault in the first degree. Now we have up above second degree where you recklessly cause serious physical injury by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon.
Good point.
But making recklessness, taking recklessness within the ambit of first degree assault, it seems to me that it might be even too much a step for my prosecution mind and soul. I don't know.
My reflection on that before Don answers is that I think that you mentioned this the first meeting I had of the group was the effect of the one who qualifies for negligent homicide, except that he had the good fortune or lack of good fortune that his victim didn't die. If you drop out reckless out of there, you drop that right down to second degree. And you can answer that.
Well, but we're speaking probably about assault in the first degree as a life, a crime that's punishable maybe by life or maybe by 25 years. Assault with intent to kill presently is punishable by life imprisonment, I think. I think that's one of the anomalies. It carries a higher sanction than second-degree murder. And presently, as you know, negligent homicide only carries 3 years in the pen. And I would imagine that probably assault in second degree, when we get around to classifying it, it's going to be somewhere in the category of 1 to 10 or something like that. And in the instance you pose, Wally, it seems to me more appropriately falls within that range of proscription than 10 to 20 or life.
You pushed me over. I agree. I'll let you answer your own question.
Well, by way of explanation, what the attempt was here on defining this assault in the first degree, we looked at the model penal code approach, and it basically seemed to be a sensible approach in that it took in the kind of situation in which there was, in most cases, the kind of situation where you would have a depraved mind at work, but maybe not somebody who's actually trying to hurt anybody. But he nonetheless succeeds in hurting somebody, and I think their feeling was that this kind of conduct should be wrapped pretty stiffly. and that made sense to us, but we didn't feel, when Gene and I talked this over, we didn't feel that we should go quite as far as New York did with respect to their assault in first degree. If you look at their draft on page 13. Now, in combining these two things, perhaps we've done some violence to particularly to the individual who's just reckless, as opposed to somebody who intentionally does these things. And I think that's the thrust of what your objection is, isn't it? That we're really saying that if he recklessly does the same thing that somebody intentionally does, he's going to be
so have the same
punished just as severe.
Right, correct. Yeah. And that's... You see, in the most of the crimes that carry a proscription for recklessness don't carry that prescription to the highest degree of crime. And here you're placing recklessness on the same level. Now I'm looking at the model penal code.
Now you see now they
and it omits it, Don.
It omits what?
In aggravated assault, it simply says, well, no, I'm sorry.
Purposely, knowingly, or recklessly?
Yes, it does say recklessly. I'm sorry. I'm not so sure I can agree with that. Because I think there's a line of demarcation between a knowing or intentional act and a reckless act.
Now, you see what New York does, you see. They say that if you've got an intent to cause serious physical injury and you cause this by a dangerous or deadly weapon, or if you have an intent really to commit mayhem, as I think is what they're sub to, or then they get too reckless, and you see what they modify reckless conduct only with this language about depraved indifference to human life, and that may be where we ran afoul in our draft. That would seem to me that, without copping out on the question here, because I think that if you intentionally cause serious physical injury, I think that a strong argument can be made that should be assault in the first degree, or the most serious form of assault, without the other element of a depraved or extreme indifference to human life, and that perhaps we can meet your objection by not applying the extreme indifference to human life test to the intentional conduct, but apply it only to the reckless type of conduct. So in other words, that if you were going to equate reckless assault in the same vein with intentional assault, that you would have to have something more added to it, that is, and approach it the way New York did. But
of course, without that, though, if you did that this time, then section point, John's point of section B, and with the only difference then would just be how strong your victim is. How vulnerable it is, the serious injury. And the only difference between one and two would then be the serious injury as far as intention is concerned. And that's not always in the hands of the actor.
Well, what would you think of this? What would you think of leaving Section 2 the way it is, except for sub C, and after weapon, add by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon, or under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life, and making Section 2 assault in the first degree? and eliminating the section three.
Assault in the third degree.
No, making section two assault in the first degree, and then section one would be assault in the second degree, and just eliminate one of the degrees here, and that so that intentionally or knowingly causing serious physical injury to another would be assault in the first degree, or intentionally or knowingly causing physical injury by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon would be first degree, as well as reckless conduct either by means of a weapon or under conditions, under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference. Would that meet your objection?
Not exactly, because then you don't draw the line of demarcation between assault with intent to kill and assault with a dangerous weapon. And there definitely is a difference.
Is there really? In a prosecutor's mind, when don't you frequently prove intent to kill by the weapon used and the viciousness of how it's used?
One of the real practicalities, as far as this is concerned, Wally, and it's as much a practicality, I think, in the mind of the judge who's trying the case and the defense attorney who's wangling for a plea, is the fact that we have that assault with a dangerous weapon is a lesser included. And I've tried any number of AWIK cases where the jury's come in with an AWDW verdict and have gotten a lot of pleas, had the DA let my guy cop out to the lesser when he was charged with the greater on the other side of the fence. If we do that, we eliminate that distinction, Don. And you know, in this very connection, I was reading this morning in the Sacramento paper about the Stanley Mosk, who was the Attorney General, you know well, it was addressing the DA's Association in California. He was telling the district attorneys that plea bargaining, here's a Supreme Court justice, the plea bargaining is a very vital element of the criminal process, and he encouraged the district attorneys to do more of that in California in an effort to cut down on the terrible backlog that's building up. I think that's a practical thing that we run into by doing that, I just question. You agree that we do eliminate that, do you not, Don?
That we eliminate
We eliminate the lesser included, and you knock the guy who down to assault in the third degree, possibly a misdemeanor. The only way you can.
Yeah, I think that would be a valid objection, that you wouldn't have as many places to go on a charge.
But maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should say, like you say, well, really, maybe there isn't a difference. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
I have to excuse my ignorance, sir. I just wonder, it seems to me the frequently in the observation, never having tried one, that the intent to kill takes its color so much. Of course, if you have a confession, I intended to kill him and I just didn't do it. But so much the viciousness with which the action is taken frequently determines where it lies. Observation. Bob, what do you think?
I would say first off that I think the reckless injury should be taken out of first degree. I think it should go back into second degree, stay in second degree. So that it would be intentionally or knowingly causing serious physical injury and so forth. I don't think that it should be a part of first degree. Then, on this matter of whether we need extreme indifference, that's undoubtedly language out of cases that, in defining recklessness, Isn't that all part of recklessness there? Recklessly causes to an unknown circumstance. Isn't that all part of the definition of recklessness? That language, under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to human life.
Well, I think that that's what it's intended to be. I don't think it reads clearly, but I think you're right, Bob. I think that it's intended just to apply to recklessly. But,
well, then you if it's intended to apply only to recklessly, then you do have a perky problem between intentional or knowingly causing physical serious injury insofar as Section 3 and Section 2 are concerned.
You don't think the serious would carry it?
No, because you have serious in both instances. 2A and Section 3 are both serious physical injury law.
Oh, I
how
see.
How did we get around
it? You went to A. I see.
Well, I thought we got around it by having the under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to apply to intentionally and knowingly as well as recklessly. But if you say that it's meant to apply only to recklessly.
Well, the way it's written here it is, yes, but we can write it differently.
Correct, but we still have to wrestle with the problem that you raise about
qualifying language?
Yeah, about the extreme indifference.
Well, suggestion was deleting the word extreme.
And I think that's your suggestion, isn't it, Bob?
I'm inclined to go along with it. I recognize the problem of indifference, but extreme is how you go about, as Bud said, how you go about instructing on extreme.
Well, of course.
Well, let's back up. Let's try it as is, leaving recklessness in first degree and just deleting the word extreme. Does that leave us with a satisfactory result?
Well, no,
leave three as is. Forget about putting recklessness back in second degree or keeping it to second degree.
Well, I think John's point is that recklessness should never be in the same category of assault in first degree.
I think if we adopt that suggestion, we compound the objection that I have to having reckless in three, because then it lowers really the degree of recklessness. So I would think that recklessness should be completely out of Section 3. And if we took it out, a person commits the crime of assault in the first degree if he intentionally or knowingly causes physical or serious physical injury to another under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life. Well,
as I read this and weigh it, I think that it's probably this language under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life was intended by the draftsman to differentiate the recklessness in three in first degree as against the recklessness in Section 2 sub C. I think that's what it was purely and simply intended to do.
That's the intent.
And
I think that's right.
Is it necessarily bad? Then we pausing here on your suggestion, which I accepted initially, that we should take recklessness out of first degree. Recklessness is simple recklessness in Section 2 under second degree, but it's a higher degree of recklessness. You know, it reminds me of a case I had in the practice once. It's kind of naughty, and I hope the secretary will excuse me, but the way it went was like this, that I was handling a divorce case for a young girl, and her mother, the estranged husband, kept annoying her on the street and saying some bad words to her, and the mother wanted to know if this could be stopped. She came in and she said, "Why, he comes up to her on the street and he calls her all kinds of whores. So I inferred from that that if he'd only call her one or two kinds, it would have been all right, but he was calling her all kinds." So the differentiation here in section 3, I'm not so sure about what it's all right. I think that I would probably vote for it if you took extreme out of there. Do you feel quite strongly, John, that recklessness doesn't belong in first degree? If it's made a recklessness that is manifested by indifference to the value of human life?
Before you answer that, John, could I tell you what New York has to say on this? Not that New York has been too persuasive way in the past, but first of all, of course, they point out in connection with your observation about the assault intent to kill that's so close to attempted murder in most cases that they felt that that's where most of those cases would start with, as an attempted murder case rather than what they formerly called assault intent to kill. Then they go on to talk about this recklessness, and they do make reckless under circumstances evincing a depraved indifference to human life. He recklessly engages in conduct which creates a grave risk of death to another person, thereby causes serious physical injury. So they've got all kinds of elements in there, but then they say that section is especially significant when considered in conjunction with another provision defining the same conduct as murder when death results. The murder provision, virtually the same as the first degree murder provision of the former penal law, applies to conduct of extreme depravity, such as shooting into a crowd wantonly but without any specific homicidal intent. Although this constitutes murder both under the former and revised penal laws in the event of fatality, it did not constitute assault under the former penal law if the result was serious but non-fatal physical injury. This obvious gap is filled by the revised provision in issue, which renders the wounder guilty of assault in the first degree. Under this subject, it is pertinent to note that even though his bullet fortuitously hits no one, the culprit is still guilty of another and lesser, though felonious, crime. They felt he was just lucky if he didn't kill somebody. And that's their rationale for putting it in first degree, that he, under those kind of circumstances, it's just sheer luck that he didn't kill somebody.
You miss somebody, you miss somebody. Well, it wouldn't be assault in the first degree if you shot at somebody and missed him.
Oh, no, I'm talking about, no, it's a wounder they're talking about.
Yeah. Right. But you killed him. But, I mean, you wounded him
rather than killing him, yeah. And they said if you did kill him, you could be prosecuted for murder.
All right, well then draw.
But if you don't kill him, you weren't prosecuted for anything under their former penal law, and that's what they were trying to.
Well,
yeah.
Draw. To answer Bob's question, I did feel quite strongly that it didn't belong there, although I understand completely the rationale that lies behind the qualifying language here. But draw a distinction then for me, if you would, between the crime of recklessly causing serious physical injury in section 2 and the crime of first degree wounding, if you will, or assault that was you just spelled out in the New York commentary.
The more I think about it, John, and the more I reflect on State versus Perkey, I'm not sure I can draw a satisfactory distinction. And you may have a good point that you might have a problem there. Whether that's a sufficient guideline, or whether you could argue that it gives the prosecutor a chance to arbitrarily charge him under second degree or first degree.
Berkeley, what would Mr.
What you're bringing up today?
Yeah, what we're doing is I raised an objection to the inclusion of recklessness in section 3, making that first degree, and we've had kind of a long discussion on it, which has been very helpful to me. And I'm sorry you missed what Bob just said before you came in, because this last clause there. causing serious physical injury to another under circumstances manifesting extremely different value of human life, we've concluded relates only to recklessness as used in this section, not to intentional or knowing. And but nevertheless, I still don't believe that the element of recklessness should rise to the dignity of first degree assault. And this is what we're tossing around.
Well, I think my feeling would be, John, that it does relate as it's written. The extreme indifference relates to intentionally and knowingly, and I think perhaps Bob's is that you usually see it in the string where it's relating only to recklessly. But the way I'd read it would certainly apply equally to intentionally as well as to recklessly and knowingly. Now, whether it should or not.
I agree that it must. Otherwise, what's the difference between it and second degree, intentionally or knowingly?
Exactly. And that's the second question.
That's my question. See, that's the question that I ask. But viewed in the context of New York, from which you adopted this, Don, that extreme depravity related only to recklessness, right?
Yes. It's true.
Well, is New York the one that has 3 degrees, or did they just go to simple and aggravated?
No, New York has 3 degrees.
Does anybody want coffee?
Yeah. We'll be up in just a minute.
Oh, I was just going to call the Senate Lounge and tell them to send some up.
Yeah.
The other question. Maybe we could bring Berkeley in on it, was the suggestion to reduce this to 2 degrees. But I objected to that because that does away with the distinction between assault with intent to kill and AW and DW, and does away with the plea bargaining and lesser included. And you spoke to that, I guess, Don, by saying that really, AWIK really is going to be attempted murder anyway, so maybe this is a way out. I don't want to do all the talking.
You see, what we were trying to do here, and I'm not so sure we succeeded, but what we were trying to do was to relate the seriousness of the offense either with the kind of implement that was used in the crime or with the kind of injury that was inflicted, one or the other. And as far as the culpability element was concerned, to talk in terms of intentionally. But I'm not so sure if that may not be the basis of our real problem here, and that is that when we talk about intentionally, you could have different kinds of intent. You could have an intent to inflict bodily injury, or you could, on the other hand, I would think, have an intent to inflict serious bodily injury. And perhaps we could distinguish better if we look to the degrees or the type of intent, rather than trying to just say that, well, if you intentionally do this, that it's going to rise to second or first degree. But maybe our intent element here needs further refinement, and that if we did this, we could meet some of these problems. In other words, I think a justifiable argument could be made for saying that it's more serious to have an intent to do grievous bodily harm to somebody as opposed to just an intent to hurt them. Just for discussion.
Well, is there a difference here? You've got these three things in second degree, the way you have it. First, in sub A, you're dealing with the result, with serious physical injury. In B, you may be dealing with very slight injury, but it's the use of the dangerous or deadly weapon that brings it up to second degree. Then in C, if it's reckless conduct gets into it. If it causes serious physical injury, which brings in both the result and the deadly or dangerous weapon. Then you get down to the third here, and you're going to the circumstances, whether or not it creates a serious risk to life. Now, I can go back up in two and set out to break a guy's arm, send around my friendly enforcer when he doesn't pay the money back at the time he owes it, And he has nothing to do, he's not, there's no under order, no orders, there's no intention to kill him at all. He's just going to break his arm for it and teach him a lesson. He's going to pay his money in the vigorish on time. However, down into, in three, you're getting into the case where life is actually threatened. And there's where you're getting, isn't that what you're trying to accomplish between the difference between second and third? The
attempted murder situation.
Yeah, you're getting into, well, or the case where you shoot into a crowd, the sort of thing where life can very easily be the thing that's snuffed out, rather than either injury plus bad means or serious injury with relatively insignificant means. You're going further. You're getting the climate in it in this third degree. The climate is that it's done. Whether the result isn't so important if the circumstances were such that spelled out a high degree of risk to life rather than high degree of risk of injury.
Right. The guy that sets the bomb off in the football stadium or something. I'm not arguing that we shouldn't have this section. And as I understand it, you're not either. You seem to denote some rationale for the existence of this. All right. I had an objection to making recklessness an element of making the person who was reckless guilty of first degree assault. But in the context in which you give the example, you seem to think maybe it's appropriate.
Well, getting at here is you look at this, when you read the third one here, you got intentionally, knowingly, and recklessly, or recklessly rather, causes, first of all, it has to cause serious physical injury. Well, we've got serious physical injury back up at two, but that's without the use of any weapon. Here we're not tying to the use of any of dangerous or deadly weapon either, but we're tying to the circumstances in which the serious physical injury occurs. The circumstances really we're tying it to, other than the presence of a deadly or dangerous weapon. We're taking the case where if the life probably was threatened. Not, I don't mean threatened in the sense of I'm going to shoot you, but life itself was in danger of being snuffed out. It seems to me that there is some sort of a, if we're saying it right, that there's a valid distinction here.
All right.
Well, I think there's a valid, excuse me.
Senator? I've been arguing with Don Collette for the last